Get your teeth checked, because today's show is brought to you by Breton Gardens Family Dentistry, our local sponsor in West Michigan. We've trusted them for over 20 years. Everything you would want in your dentist and more. Go to BretonGardensFamilyDentistry.com and you'll see what I mean. And now,
welcome and get ready. It is the Rechoice Podcast.
You've made it to the Rechoice Podcast, a place to listen again, choose wisely, and live joyfully. My name is Joe Pellerito. Today is episode 51 with Daniel Abbott and Rajel Jones discussing the word recover and their new book, Wounds. Here at the Rechoice Pod, you get to hear lessons from beautiful people who have something in common, a reflective and resilient mindset. There are three basic steps to rechoice. One, name the experience. Two, choose a rechoice word. And then three, tell us how it helps you navigate today. And no, it's not your headphones. You are going to hear some occasional clicks and clacks. Sorry, I didn't catch that during the actual interview, but I think you'll see that the content is premium. It's time for the show. Listeners, today I get to reconnect with someone I last spoke with 30 years ago and another I only met 30 seconds ago. All right. Hey, this is a timely episode as our guest just launched an incredible book called Wounds. And I think it's just what's needed today. It's my pleasure to introduce to you Mr. Daniel Abbott and Mr. Rajel Jones.
Hey. Hello, everyone.
There we go. So, you know, we like to start out with something good around here. It's a beautiful Saturday. So I want each of you to think of something that is current that is making you smile, something that even happened yesterday or it's something you're looking forward to. Who wants to go first?
I got this.
All right, Rajel.
So this morning my daughter grabbed my phone and she told me that it is 120 hours until my birthday. The cool thing about it is she followed up by saying, I bet everybody is buying you a gift. And I said, you know what? I hope everybody's buying me wounds. I hope everybody's purchasing wounds for us so that we can move forward. So that's what's making me smile today.
Now we're talking, and we figured this out through Facebook, but you and I are both celebrating this week, my friend. And by the time this is actually launched, it will already have been our birthday. That does not mean y'all don't need to still get him a present. You just heard what he wants.
That's right. Keep the gift coming. Happy birthday to you too, Joe.
Hey, thanks, man. All right, Daniel, what's your good thing?
Well, while we're on the subject of kids, my six-month-old recently said his first word, and it wasn't mom.
Oh.
Nice.
It was dad.
There we go.
And I was so proud and feeling so good until I realized that my very competitive wife, Vanessa, was going to be a little bit upset when she heard it. So I spent that day trying to teach him how to say mom, but to no avail.
Wow.
Good. All right. Well, we all heard it now too. So there we go. Good. Great job. We like to play games around here too. So just to kind of settle things in, let people get to know you a little bit. Rajel, first, just really short, where are you joining us today? Where are you calling from?
I am in the greater Nashville, Tennessee area. I'm down in the dirty, dirty South, but I'm from the Northwestern Michigan area, but home is now down here in Tennessee. So we're experiencing an 80-degree day today.
What?
Make all you Michiganders mad. Got to say that real quick.
Well, I just got to tell you real quick that we're getting to 70, which is incredible in November.
That's beautiful.
So we'll take that. Right. We'll take that. In fact, I don't want 80. I'll take 70.
I hear you.
Daniel, where are you joining us from?
I'm right here with you, right down the street. I'm in Grand Rapids on 44th and Breton. looking out at,
oh my gosh,
all these beautiful, beautiful Michigan colors, the fall, the leaves falling down. And one thing I know about being from Michigan, and both of you guys know this, is this time of year, if we get a couple of nice days in a row, we know what's coming next.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We know some snow or sleet or hail or something to remind us that winter's coming. So I'm soaking it up. I'm enjoying this weather.
Good.
While I can.
Hence my move south.
Yeah. And Daniel, I just can't believe you and I haven't run into each other, knowing that we're neighbors, really. I'm at 68th and Eastern. I've got good friends on 44th and Breton. In fact, our local sponsor of this show is Breton Gardens Family Dentistry, which is right near you.
No kidding.
Yeah, isn't that something?
I think I may have seen you at the gym a time or two.
Wait, Planet Fitness?
Do you go to Planet Fitness?
Oh my gosh, yeah? You kidding me? You didn't want to go over and say hi?
Well, it was pre-COVID, and I was like, I'm pretty sure that's one of the Pellerito boys I grew up with. And
which one? Right.
And I didn't know for sure, and I'm... You know, I sound comfortable probably to you right now, but I'm very, very reserved and introverted and private. So I didn't want to create some kind of
awkward
situation. But now that we're friends on Facebook and I've seen you as an adult, I'm pretty sure it was you. Pre-COVID.
I wouldn't have recognized you because I only think of you as a middle schooler under 5 foot or something. Not 5 foot. I know you grew. You grew a little. So, well, and hey, don't we all, you know what's nice about that place, though? It's a judgment-free zone, and that we need more of that.
Right. Yeah. I like it there.
Me too. All right. Well, we got some quiz questions here for you. So this first quiz question, any of you can answer. Fill in the blank. Blank is in Fremont, Michigan, has 25 beds that serve all of Newaygo County, a cancer care center, intensive care unit, birthing center, and a women's health center, not to mention a fitness center. I guess we can go there for a judgment-free zone, and a medical day spa. I mean, this sounds great. Any guesses?
Oh, boy.
Is this Gerber Hospital?
Oh, look at that. All right. You got it. So nice job, Rajel. And Daniel, I'll let you explain how this question really relates to both of you.
Well, we were both born in that hospital about a year and a month apart, way, way, way back in the day. So, and actually both of our dads worked at Gerber at different times in their lives, but they didn't, I don't think they knew each other while they worked there.
And my mom worked there too. She worked up on the hill.
Okay.
At Gerber Product Company. So we are indeed Gerber baby.
That's perfect. Well, and for people who are outside of Michigan, you'll get a little better idea of, what we're talking about. But when you hear 25 beds serving an entire county, that might give you an idea. Okay. So we'll just keep moving. This next question is for Rajel. Name that player. Okay. Did you know the Lakers franchise began with the 1947 purchase of a disbanded team, the Detroit Gems? Then they played in Minneapolis for over a decade before moving to the West Coast. With famous players like Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, they were very competitive with the longest winning streak of 33 straight games in a row during the 71-72 season, a record that still holds today. But people will never forget the 80s Lakers, nickname Showtime, because of why?
Mainly because they were full of magic from Irvin, Magic Johnson, number 32, from Lansing Everett High School to Michigan State University, all the way to L.A.
Oh, dang.
Showtime.
you not only named the person, you gave the history. That's awesome. Nice job. I hope you're enjoying this.
I'm a fan.
Oh, I know. I know from the book. And so, Daniel, for your question, we're going to continue the sports theme in a slightly different way. Here we go. Move over, Madden, because this game's a classic. In this game, you get a playbook of four. Count them. Four whole offensive plays to pick from. Defense, if you anticipate the right play, the offensive line will collapse. Both GameStop and even Time Magazine have listed it in their all-time greatest video games of, well, video games of all time. Yeah. So, hey, what's the game?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say if you wanted to win this game, you wanted to make sure you have Bo Jackson on your
team.
That's
right.
Because he had like a little extra gear on that game for some reason. And that game is Tecmo Bowl.
You got it. Nice
Bo
job.
Knows.
You guys are 3 for 3, and yeah, you're right. Bo, I mean, you can run circles in that game. You can go all the way back to your own end zone and run back to the other end zone because he's so fast you can't catch. It's kind of fun. That's great. Nice job. And, you know, to connect to basketball, though, I know later, you know, you and I, this is our history, Rachel. I knew you as Dan, not Daniel, and I remember – see, I grew up in Hidden Valley Apartments for a few years, and I know you did too.
Yes.
But the last memory I have of you, we were playing basketball together at school, in middle school. You were actually really nice to me. Like, I was this real insecure kid, and I remember once we were paired together, you had to cover me, and at the end, you were like, Joe, I'm glad I'm done covering you because you're fast. And like, I needed to hear that because I was a short little kid that didn't end up continuing in basketball, okay, but that was pretty cool. Now I know that was nice sweet talking. You didn't become a sweet talker later in basketball. I know that. So tell us about the Mill Pond.
Man, the Mill Pond for me, if for those of you that haven't read the book, was my kind of refuge up north when I moved from Grand Rapids to Newaygo County my freshman year and missed the city ball. You know, I grew up playing basketball with kids older than me, kids that like to throw me on the cement and make me want to cry, but dare not to. You know, that's how I grew up playing basketball. And the Mill Pond was in White Cloud, where Rajel grew up. And at the time that I was in Newaygo County, a lot of other city kids got dragged kicking and screaming to White Cloud from Chicago, Detroit, some other people from Grand Rapids. And those kids all collected on weekends and summers at that court. And it was the same kind of game that I grew up in. And it was like a slice of home away from home for me during that time. And I know Rajel spent some time there too, but his time at the Mill Pond was a little bit before my time at the Mill Pond.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. So it's time. We're going to get into the book here at this point. But first, you know, here at the Rechoice Pod, we like to center on one word. And I know you've been thinking about that word that starts with R-E. So Rajel Jones and Daniel Abbott, what's the word?
I'll give it to you. The word that we chose for the Rechoice Podcast is recover. Recover.
Okay. And in short, why that word?
Yeah, I mean, the word is a powerful word. Now, I do have to stop and say, Joe, this was a hard one for us to pick. We went back and forth and went over a lot of words. It's interesting when you have a co-author because we have to come to a point of agreement. We've been trying to figure out how to do that the last several months. But the challenge with any of these re-words is that, especially as it relates to our content, There's a feeling you have to want generally start from a place of wholeness and rightness in order to re anything. So rethink, you have to have first thought. To reuse, you have to have used something before. To remember, you have to have something to go back to. There has to be a frame of reference. So when we think about, you know, our vision for peace and shalom and racial you know, happiness right. and wholeness is that we can't say that in our country, which we do love. We can't say though that we've ever really been at an amazing place.
Right.
Because throughout history, we've had these racial tensions. We've had racial just challenges and inequities over and over again. So it's what we had to pick, what we had to find was a word that we felt like we could get to safely. And we feel like we started with energy and hope, and then life hits you and you're devastated by the reality of the terrible nature of us as humans. And then our book Wound is pushing us to get past that, to not only get back to an initial state, but actually to get back to a better state, the intended state of humankind being able to live together in peace and unity, being able to function together. So our stories do the same thing. We go from an ignorant hope and energy, not ignorant in the sense of like something's wrong with us, but we were kids. And so, you know, when you're a kid, you think everything's going to be good. But in reality, that's an ignorant hope and an ignorant energy. And we move from there to beginning to realize that it's not what we thought. And we experience some hopelessness because of the reality of some tough situations. But this book, we're trying to move past that to a knowing, not an ignorant, but a knowing hope and energy. And we're trying to push, hopefully, our world to a place of recovery. And so that's why we chose the word. We want to recover.
First of all, thanks for kind of like using the pattern we have here and like going, okay, I'm going to respect what Joe wants to do here, but thanks for picking an RE word. But it's so related to that book Wounds, that title Wounds. And, you know, we just had some quiz questions that made us laugh and remember being a kid. Yeah. Reality hits. Reality hits. Right. So I'm loving that. So there's a foreword to your book. You know, normally I would ask you a lot more about the word recover. I want to go right into Wounds and into your book. So who could read the foreword?
I'll read the foreword.
All right, go for it.
I have known esteemed novelist Daniel Abbott for more than 25 years. We met while we were both teenagers in northern Michigan. The town we were primarily in, White Cloud, was in a rural area with a population of less than 1,200 people. While less than 10% of the population was comprised of African Americans, this percentage was greater than all other surrounding towns in the county combined. Daniel is a Caucasian male who moved to the community just before beginning his high school career. And after experiencing the majority of his childhood surrounded by people of many different races on the northeast side of Grand Rapids, Michigan, it was there that he began building deep, meaningful relationships with people from various cultures and developed a subconscious comfort with difference. This cultural immersion experience, in combination with his lived experience as a white male in urban, suburban, and rural communities, produced an ability in him to navigate cultures dominated by whites, those dominated by black, and those dominated by almost every culture in between. In much the same way, my being an African American, born into a Caucasian-dominated geographic and social landscape, forced me to learn how to navigate white-dominated cultures in order to survive. I was also fortunate to be born into a strong and proud black family, with parents who intentionally put me in situations to affirm and celebrate being a member of black culture. The product of both of our experiences has been the ability to seemingly seamlessly flow between black and white cultures. We both agree that this ability has ultimately been a blessing to our lives. It has produced fruitful relationships, opportunity-provoking skill sets, and eyes and hearts awakened to the realities of racial and social disparities. We have a keen understanding of both the beauty of difference and the pain of fear-based ignorance. Later in life, Daniel and I reconnected as we happened to marry two sisters, which elevated our pre-existing friendship into a deeper level of familyship. Previously brothers in experience, now brothers-in-law, we have continued to observe one another's experience of navigating racial and cultural divides and experiencing the world through lenses of empathy with cultural sensitivity. I now am fortunate enough to be one of several black uncles to Daniel's biracial children, and Daniel is the white uncle to my black daughter. Most recently, our social media presences collided as we both responded to current reminders of race-driven inequity with stories of our experiences in northern Michigan and beyond. These were shared after experiencing videos of the senseless murders of yet another two African Americans who did not deserve to die. Mr. Ahmaud Arbery, date of birth, May 8, 1994. Date of death, February 23rd, 2020. And Mr. George Floyd, date of birth, October 14th, 1973. Date of death, May 25th, 2020. May they both rest in peace, but may our peace rest until we can contribute to bringing about positive change in our country to prevent the continual adding of names to the list of women and men viciously murdered in America, primarily because of the color of their skin. It is our hope that as we reflect on several personal stories of how the two of us have experienced the ugly head of racism in this country and what we have felt and learned based on our unique experiences, that we would expose how this mischievous, irrational monster operates. Ultimately, if we can inspire one to stand against this demonic force, this project is worth it. Furthermore, if we can provide tools, strike that, weapons, to fight, injure, and destroy the beast, then every negative experience we have encountered is worth it. Today, we urge you to challenge your comfort zone, experience difference from a new perspective, maximize your empathy, and see the world through another's eyes. May our pens be our swords. Let the battle begin.
Well, I can't think of a better way to really look into this book than to hear that foreword. And it really lays it out. It introduces us to you. And when I think of the word recover, I mean, I'm hearing recover from what? And I'm hearing it right there. Thank you so much for that. So, Daniel, I want to start with you right now. You know, I want to let you know I see your writing skills, my friend. I mean, when did you decide to become a novelist? That's a long shot from Southern California.
Yeah.
Why am I bring up Southern California? I mean, in that chapter where you have your 43-year-old self talking to your 19-year-old self, dang, I mean, so good. The way you pattern this book is memorable. So let's talk about patterns for a minute. Daniel, when you think about the setup of this book, describe to our audience after the foreword, you know, how do you set this thing up?
It was a whirlwind in the beginning. When we first decided to write the book, Rajel and I were planning on writing a series of essays addressing racial inequality. And very early on in the process, we realized that the book was a lot more than that, that because of our shared experiences in these different settings, a lot of the stories were beginning to overlap. And most importantly, we realized that we were the only two people capable of writing this book because of our shared experiences. And it turned into what could have been a 500 or 600 page book. Right. And the contract that we had signed with our publisher called for a book of 200 pages or less. And when we realized that the story was like more of a multi-point of view novel than a collection of essays, I reached out to the publisher and he hit panic mode. Like, we were only planning on a 200 page book. Like, if you don't keep this book under 200 pages, then we're going to have to reevaluate the contract and figure out a different pay scale. So me and Raj came back like, man, we have it. Like, when you're pregnant with an idea and the birthing process begins, it's hard to redirect. So the chapter that you mentioned, Rains in Southern California, was my way of turning a 500 page book into a 200-page book. It's kind of a transitional chapter for me in the narrative, because you see me at a young age without children. And when I'm reintroduced into the story as an adult, it's well, actually, after that chapter in Forfeiting White Privilege, I'm divorced with four children. So it's like, how do you fill all that space in just 200 pages? I had to somehow briefly tell my life story without making it feel brief. So,
well, you nailed it, man. You nailed it. I'm just telling that.
It was hard. It was really hard. We have a big story.
Yeah.
And with a different publisher, we probably would have written a 500-page book. But to do that chapter wrong would have messed up the entire book. And to not tell the life story would have left an incomplete narrative. So I revisited an essay I wrote in undergrad at Grand Valley where I did something similar. But there was just more life story in it this time. So that's the way I approached it.
You know, I think we all could have a conversation with our younger selves. And maybe we already do. But it was it was so, I don't know. It was really, really memorable how you patterned that. And Rajel, the pattern I see for you and your writing, because audience, you know, it's called a collaborative memoir. So, you know, chapter by chapter, it's switching from Rajel to Daniel to Rajel to Daniel, and you see the overlaps. But the word different is the one I hear in your story, and how that even the definition of different changes. Would you agree?
Yeah, different is different. Different is different.
Tell us about how it evolves.
Yeah, there's three chapters in there where I play with that word different, and they could be seen as conflicting, but so could each of us. Each of us could also be seen as conflicting. So one of the first chapter I wrote is entitled "I'm Definitely Different," and you know it starts with the realization, the coming of age. And kind of my earliest experiences as a child, recognizing in early elementary school, recognizing, okay, I'm the only black kid here in a room full of white kids. And beginning to come to that realization that not only is my skin color different, but my culture is different. The way my home life is different. The way I describe meals is different. I didn't know what supper was, for instance. And my family referred to it as dinner. So when I went to the white friend's house and they said it's supper time, I had no idea what we were talking about.
Right.
And so just journeying through those differences that may or may not be race-based. And sometimes it's hard to differentiate and to discern what is difference based on race, what is family, what is region. There's so many different ways that we're different. So that was that. And then the next one that I wrote was entitled "Different is Lonely." And so after coming to that realization that I'm different, then I began to see some experiences, you know, being the only one, the only black kid in the area, how that sometimes made you an island. And I have pretty good social connection skills and all that, and have for as long as I can remember, but there were still some lonely moments. And so we went into that in that chapter. And then a few chapters later, it was entitled "I'm Not Different," which seems to be in direct opposition to what I've said. And so that is the mornings where you wake up and you're like, man, why is everybody tripping just because of skin color and melanin count and this social construct of race? You know, I'm still a human being. I have red blood. I have, the same kind of feelings. I have the same kind of hopes, the same kind of aspirations. And so in some ways we aren't different. And in other ways we completely are. And so we did a lot of journeying through that just to look at the concept and to see, how that might be able to help somebody else who is feeling different, but still wanting to be treated like a human being. And so that's a part of the journey that we take in some of those early chapters in the book.
Well, and beautiful is, it's beautiful too. I mean, beautifully different.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
And I see that interwoven as well. But you know what I really want to know? I want to know when you asked that girl out, and that note, maybe this connects a lot of people. The note, it had checkboxes, right? Right?
Right.
Okay. Yes, no, maybe. Right. And
right. That's the only way to do it. Right.
Right. And now, did you say, will you, this is what I remember. I remember asking, will you go with me?
Right.
It's like, go with me where? Right. It's so funny
right.
to hear
Can't
that.
Go
today.
Anywhere.
Yeah. Hey Siri, tell me a joke.
My umbrella broke in half, but that's okay. There's only a 50% chance of rain.
Good one. You know what's not funny?
What's that?
Forgetting to get a special gift for that someone special.
I almost forgot. I have to get something from my best friend Alexa. Where should I go?
Well, that's easy. Go to joysparksdesigns.com. One-of-a-kind bracelets, cufflinks, watches, and more. All custom-made using vintage typewriter keys. Made in Michigan. Get it shipped anywhere.
Great idea. Hey, Joe. Since you know Joy Sparks, do you think I could get a good deal?
Sure. In fact, all listeners of the Rechoice podcast, go to joysparksdesigns.com and use the checkout code RECHOICE to save 10% off.
And now, back to the show.
Rajo, can I stay with you for a moment?
Absolutely.
I live near Pinewood Park. And
yeah.
Daniel, I think you'll agree, the place where we live right now, it's incredible. It's diverse. So many races and countries represented. So you'd think, well, we're no Nuevo, right? I mean, we're well-versed in being diverse, right?
Yep.
Does that fit the experience you had in 2014, Pinewood Park? I mean, what happened?
No,
what happened there?
Unfortunately, not at all. So, I was there with a group. We were actually working on some stuff for the church I was pastoring at the time, which was in Big Rapids up in Mecosta County. Victory Life, where you at, Victory Life people? And we were there for a planning meeting. Well, really, I wasn't there for a planning meeting. My wife, Camille, was there for a planning meeting with a few of the other church leaders. Some other women with the church. I was there to play with my probably 1-year-old daughter, Kaden, who I mentioned to you all earlier. And so I was just pushing her on the swing, having a good day, and then joined the group back. And not long after rejoining with the group, a couple officers came in our direction, hands on weapons. And so, you know, we were good upstanding citizens doing the work of the Lord, trying to do some planning to hopefully help our community and, you know, find out how we can give to our community. And these officers again approached us with hands on weapons, not looking at us like a church leadership group, but instead looking at us like someone that fit the description. And that's what the chapter is entitled. I fit the description. And so the chapter goes through this whole experience and all the thoughts that were going through my mind as they approached, and even some of the thoughts that I imagined were going through the officer's mind. They were coming. Apparently, they had received a report of someone in the area, a black male, who had done something. I never really got clarity on exactly what the description was or what the report was, and even have some doubt that if there was a report in the way that they framed it. But it was a negative experience, and it was a threatening experience that could have easily turned the other way. And this was happening just weeks after the Michael Brown situation in Missouri. And so there was a heightened sense of concern that this could go very ugly. Police brutality is not a new encounter for people of color. And it wasn't my first experience with a negative police officer. Now, I always have to parenthetically pause and say, I am not one who's of the belief that all police are bad people. I believe we need policing. I believe we need, though, good policing. I believe we need police who are equipped to understand cultural intelligence and cultural navigation, and to check their biases at the door before they engage with people. These officers did not check those biases.
Yeah.
And so it turned into a bad encounter. And the thoughts and the emotions that were flooding through my mind. It was tough to write the chapter because I had to relive those thoughts, those feelings, those emotions. And ultimately, at the end of it, we found what likely had happened was a bystander, a concerned citizen, if you will, standing her ground, if you will. A Karen, as is labeled, you know, people have labeled this the Karen syndrome, if you will. Had likely been the one who called the police on us. And we don't know why to this day. We weren't doing anything threatening. We weren't doing anything non-productive. We weren't doing anything that should have negatively impacted her experience. But there is a fear and there are stereotypes and there is judgment that comes in people's minds about Black people. There, we sometimes, for whatever reason, and I think it's often fear of the unknown, people sometimes feel like we're threatening when we aren't even thinking about them.
Rajel and Caden saw it that day, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and I can see why you said it was hard to write because, I mean, you talk about your heartbeat. You talk about all of that. And then later in a different chapter, you just make note of when you have a gun, pepper spray, billy club, a taser, a partner, fists, handcuffs, and training. What's the tools that are missing? And I think it's really what you guys are hitting at in terms of
absolutely.
Do we know how to navigate?
And I can add to this story as well.
Yes,
sir. As Rajel was talking, it made me think of this really tired rhetoric that I've been seeing on social media that when addressing racial disparity when it comes to the police, a lot of white Americans are saying things like, if you're not doing anything wrong, the police won't mess with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, not true.
I wasn't present that day at the park, but I know every person at that park personally. And like I can witness that there is no conceivable way there was anything criminal or anything that looked criminal. I mean, we're talking about
a park where Rajel people have my playground, picnic. I mean, come on.
Pushing my daughter on the swing.
And our sister-in-law, Tracy, holding her then baby at the time, Caleb. Yeah. And like, Joe, you've been to the park, so you know what that park looks like. Imagine a group of people quietly sitting in a pavilion with laptops talking to each other. And that rated police officers approaching cautiously with hands on weapons.
Right.
That's important to note.
This is a
family church setting. And this is still happening.
Yep.
Now, thank God nothing happened, but
it could have.
When you're already have your hand ready on your gun, I mean, that's a setup. It could be a setup.
And I'm not of the demeanor to just take stuff. And so one thing that I have, the hardest thing for me ever to learn to control, I've learned to control a lot of things, but my mouth, man, oh man, I've got words. I tried to show that in the book. I've got some words. Yeah. And so they were ready. And to try to hold back all of those words, I mean, attempting to align with training from way back when my dad had to give me those talks growing up from a grown Black man to a young Black man about how to engage with the police, how to be respectful, how to make sure that you're being still, how to make sure you don't have any sudden movements, how to make sure that your hands are visible. All this stuff that really should not have to be in the training. He should be able to be equipping me to be the man that he sees me being, but instead he has to try to equip me so that I can stay alive. That's problematic. That shouldn't even be the narrative. That shouldn't even be the discussion. But yet that's the reality. And that's the reality in most Black families, but not just Black people of color in general. That's the narrative. We have to learn what is acceptable. And even if you do what's acceptable, it may or may not benefit you. It may or may not work. And it's a serious problem.
Well, listeners, there's a lot of experiences I could pull from the book. I chose to ask about that one. And there's more. What I appreciate about both of you too is how you include family. You know, your brother, Rajel, Daniel, Diane, which, wow. Daniel, can you tell us who is Diane to you? Why do you think this is an important piece of your story, this connection?
Diane Cartwright was a third parent to me growing up. When you read the book, you'll witness me going through a lot of bullying and racial situations at a homogenous high school in Nuevo County that will lead to me getting into a fight and getting into some trouble. And ultimately my parents signing over custody to Diane Cartwright, who is a black woman. She was a single mother at the time with four children. And she brought an angry white basketball player into her home and treated me like family. And you know, she's been it's kind of hard to talk about, Joe.
I know, Daniel.
We lost her. Sorry. We lost her a year ago, or less than a year ago, and writing about her in the story for me was really hard, but I couldn't possibly write about her and my relationship to cultural navigation. She had to be in it. And I wanted to show what love can do when it comes to difference. When you're loved and you love other people of color and have the ability to show, to see what goes on through their eyes and their point of view and experience the things that they experience, it's eye-opening. It's a gift. It's a curse. It's the ability to walk through another person's shoes and experience those things. It's just not something that the average white American is allowed to do. You know, you have to, if you are from a white family and your brothers and sisters are white, your aunts and uncles are white, your grandparents are white, and your neighborhood's white, it's hard to believe a lot of this stuff is going on. And
I think that sentence right there, it's hard to believe that this stuff is going on, is one of the biggest statements on this, and why we're even here today. I don't believe it's happening. And you're saying she gave you, I mean, your background for sure, but also she gave you, you said, what'd you say, curse and benefit, gift and curse?
I've had the privilege and the horror of seeing racial inequity firsthand. When I walk into a store, I walk in by myself, I walk in as a clean-cut white man who is respectful, and I don't run into any problems. But when I walk into a store holding my wife's hand, it's a different response. When I walk into a store with my children, the Meyer on 68th and Kalamazoo, that I'm sure you've been through multiple times, right?
Yep.
How many times have they stopped you to check your bags walking out of that Meyer?
One, and it was because an alarm went off.
Right, an alarm. And
an audio
they've
alarm.
They never stopped me. Even when an alarm went off, they just looked at me and were like, go ahead. I've never been stopped once.
Now that I think about it, that's exactly what happened to me. The wave.
Yeah.
Oh, you're good.
Yeah. And like you mentioned earlier, the Kentwood School District is, by the numbers, the most diverse area in the entire state of Michigan, by the numbers. I used to work as an interventionist at Bowen Elementary School. And by the numbers, like it's legit the most diverse. Yeah. In that same Meyer where I was never bothered, where Joe was never bothered, I was walking out with my then 19-year-old son at the time, and we got stopped at the door randomly to have our bags checked. No alarms went off, no nothing. It was just me and my biracial adult son. And we got stopped. And I've been going to that Meyer since 2002, 2003.
Since it was built.
How long I've been in the Kentwood area. I've never once been stopped. And it's not a coincidence that I was stopped that day with my son. And when I see people stopped, at that door, it's almost always a person of color.
See, I can't believe we have this in common too, Daniel. So I worked it for Kentwood as well, for the freshman campus for several years. And so I have a lot of friends that teach in the district, and you're right. It is. It's the most diverse in the state of Michigan. It's number 7 for the country. That's a gift. And I guess one of the reasons I chose for Rajel to speak to Pinewood Park, and Daniel, you brought up the Myers, that even in this situation where you think, well, we're good because we live in this community and we pretty much have these lessons already. No, I mean, it still happens here as well. Daniel, can we go back into time for a little bit, talk about a different community? And I want to read a short portion and you tell us really who it was directed to. It said, I don't want to hurt you. I want to listen. I don't want to punish you. I want you to think. I believe in justice, not revenge. I want to believe if I ever see you again, I won't hurt you. But if I'm being honest, I really don't know, because I'm wounded. A wounded man's a dangerous man. What's it like to hear those words right now?
My heart rate went up a little bit, I'll tell you that.
But why is your heart rate going up right now?
I mean, that's revisiting trauma. You can't revisit trauma without having an emotional response. And that, with maturity and growth, you learn how to deal with that emotional response in a more healthy way, but it doesn't stop the emotional response ever. And yeah, so what Joe read from right there was my first encounter with racism in Newaygo County. My two best friends growing up were Larry Brown and Matt Mahaney. I'm sure you remember both of those guys. Larry's black. Matt is half Korean, half white. And one of the early weekends after we moved to Newaygo, after school started, Larry and Matt came to visit for the weekend, and we were out and about dribbling our basketballs. I don't remember exactly what we were doing, but we were out visible around this small, racially homogenous town. And that Monday when I returned to school, this young man, who I won't name, cornered me at my locker and asked me, who is that shadow following you around? And this is, I was a freshman, so we're probably looking at 1991 or so.
That'd be about right.
And so I'm like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? And he said that N, the N word. And it just blew my mind. You know, you grew up in Hidden Valley briefly, like you said, Joe. Do you ever recall hearing that word in Hidden Valley?
No.
I don't either. I don't. That was a neighborhood where a lot of young families lived while they were trying to get their credit and money saved to buy a house. There was all different races and ethnicities in the area that I grew up in Grand Rapids. And Joe remembers it well. It was a community where kids were running all over the place playing together. And it was normal. Different was normal where I grew up. And in Newaygo, difference was threatening. Mm-hmm. And my friends were threatening, and I became N lover. I became Wigger. I became white N. Mm-hmm. And a group of seniors that year, coming out of their government class, used to hit me over the head with newspapers and call me these things. And like Joe also mentioned earlier, I was a little dude when I was younger, and it was my first experience being bullied in that way and feeling isolated. And I got very angry. And over the course of 2 years, I happened to grow like 9 inches at the same time my anger grew, and ultimately led to me, retaliating with violence over that same word my junior year in high school. And that's like what led me to moving in with Diane Cartwright. And that's really where my experience with cultural navigation began, was with that moment with the person that called me those things.
So listeners, you can read the rest. And again, I can't emphasize enough the gift you both have of telling the story that, you know, a podcast here isn't going to do. I want everybody to go find this book. Because when I think of the word you just said, cultural navigation, you both have got that GPS, I guess. You know, you both have that cultural navigation. But I don't know that everyone listening here even sees the map. This world's more three-dimensional because of the gift you guys are offering here.
Thanks, Joe.
It makes things more visible. Because if I can't see something, then there's nothing to fix, right? If I don't see it or it's not a part of my experience, then why would it even be a part of my responsibility? I mean, so for example, Rajel, I'm thinking of the anonymous poster that you describe, or, you know, how about the more, you know, we just heard a couple examples too of outright overt racism, racist behavior. There's a lot of subtle ones as well that it's not a part of my radar, or it's not always a part of my radar. So here, right. I guess my ultimate question right now here is, life begins at the end of your comfort zone. I mean, what do you think? You've heard that statement before, right?
Absolutely.
What does that make you think about that, Rajel?
Man, it makes me think, for one, how my life being a black person in mostly white environments as a child and then working in predominantly white institutions, a comfort zone is elusive. And so some of us have the misfortune, but then it can become an opportunity to learn how to live in your comfort zone on a daily basis. And I think as I'm thinking about this, this is nothing new for people of color. And I think, man, even that thought triggers me to think about the fact that we're not the first people doing this work. We're not the first people telling these kinds of stories. We're not the first people who have had these experiences. And many before us have had worse. And so the joy of that is that we're standing on the shoulders of those who came before us. The pain of that is that their struggles weren't enough to bring us into where we would hope to be. And that's painful. But, you know, I even think about, I've been this morning, my father-in-law, Rainer Gant, he posted an inspiring challenge for people to live out their destiny. And I think of the years he mentioned in there of how he did this kind of work, this same diversity, equity, and inclusion type work professionally for 20, 30 years. And it made a difference. But he will be the first to tell you that the difference isn't enough. And so it becomes the next generation's mandate, and not just people of color, all human beings who have decency and want justice and want there to be a level playing field. It becomes all of our responsibility to be comfortable with discomfort, to find a way, even though we have many, many of our listeners and readers and viewers have the option of just turning their head away. Some of us don't, but many do. In order for things to really improve, no one can afford to turn their head away when they see injustice happen. So, thinking about my father-in-law, there's a poem that he used to read at the end of every one of his diversity talks. And I think it gets at really what you're asking about. And I just pulled it up because I didn't memorize it like he has. But I just want to really quickly just read that. It's entitled The Cold Within. It's written by a white man, James Patrick Kinney. I believe it was in the 1930s. It's called The Cold Within, and it says, six humans trapped in happenstance, in dark and bitter cold. Each one possessed a stick of wood, or so the story's told. Their dying fire in need of logs, the first woman held hers back. For of the faces around the fire, she noticed one was black. The next man, looking across the way, saw not one of his church and couldn't bring himself to give the fire his stick of birch. The third one sat in tattered clothes. He gave his coat a hitch. Why should his log be put to use to warm the idle rich? The rich man just sat back and thought of the wealth he had in store and how to keep what he had earned from the lazy, shiftless poor. Black man's face bespoke revenge as the fire passed from sight. But all he saw in his stick of wood was a chance to spite the white. The last man of this forlorn group did naught except for gain. Giving only to those who gave was how he played the game. The logs held tight in death's still hands was proof of human sin. They didn't die from the cold without. They died from the cold within. Man, he would read that. Yeah. He would read that at the end of all his talks. And that just leads me to think about how people have been doing good work in these areas for longer than Daniel and I have been alive. But there's still plenty of work to do, and we need everybody's voice, and we need to be willing to give our birch, to do our part,
to take a look.
Yeah.
Right. I hear you in terms of the standing on shoulders. Right. And so Daniel, let's talk about my ancestors and your ancestors. You wrote this: my ancestors are a burden. Right. But you don't whine or deny it. You say, allow me that burden of the sins I didn't commit. Allow me the apology that you'll never receive. Allow my life to be an example of hope, of love, and allow this book to be my action, my strength, and my voice. Grant me permission to be accountable. I mean, how do you feel hearing that? Is that what's needed today? Back to the word to recover, do you think?
That's exactly what we need. The problem we have, and we've been alluding to this a lot, that if you are a white American in a white family, in a white neighborhood, life is good. You don't have to worry about these things. The problem is there's this unspoken law in America that American values are white, conservative, Christian, heterosexual, woman submitting to man values. Like, it's this unspoken thing, and the people at the very head of everything are expecting everyone to conform to these quote-unquote American values. And that's not the case. There are beautiful, brilliant people of every color, of every religion, of every sexual orientation. And it's the job of our country to accommodate everyone, not the job of everyone to conform. You cannot conform without losing your identity. We need each of us to be able to keep our identity and become the country we say we are in our Constitution. It's that simple. And denying that there's a problem is a bigger problem than the problem. So, and that's what I see. And it's not because white people are evil, white people are bad. It's because white people are not experiencing this firsthand. And when they hear about it, they're denying it instead of investigating it. If you investigate it, if you listen to people's stories, and this is something me and Rajel see a lot from a lot of our mutual friends in Newaygo County. They have exposure to one or two black people that they consider like close friends or whatever, but they don't ever consider what the black person had to do to be their friend. They have to conform?
Yeah.
How did they have to conform in White Cloud, Michigan to fit in? What did they have to give up as a part of their identity? You know, not everyone is like Rajel with the ability to culturally navigate and learn how to be a version of himself in every situation. But I think Rajel will be the first one to tell you, he always gives up a little of himself in every situation.
Right.
And why should he have to? Why can't Rajel be Rajel as I know him? he gets to be himself around me. He gets to be himself around his wife, his family. And I think he's a pretty great guy. Why should he have to change? And that's the expectation. That's what systemic racism is. It's an unspoken expectation to conform to these values that aren't really representative of our country as a whole.
Yeah, and doing the work does not mean just sending a meme or something, right? Think about...
Lord have mercy.
Right. it's deeper than that. And so we have a choice here, whether we're going to recover and open the cover and read somebody else's story rather than retreat from what's uncomfortable. Mike McCarg, he's another guy I read and listen to. He talks about defensive mechanisms and that when we hear about somebody else's experience with being mistreated, many have to quickly respond defensively because they don't want to feel implicated. But I think it's more, and this is me talking now, I think it's more sinister than just ghosting somebody, right? It's interesting that in our defensiveness, we can actually end up silencing somebody else who is simply trying to share their experience because we're not there to listen. So let's listen and let's read. Is there anything else you want our readers to, or our readers? Is there anything else you want our listeners to know as we close things out here?
Well, I'll say I hope our listeners become readers. I'll say
that's
that.
That's right. Good. Where can they find this incredible book?
Rajel's got the whole spiel for that one.
It'll be in show notes too. But Rajel, yeah, take the mic.
Well, I'm glad he had that confidence in me. I'm looking for my notes now, but you can absolutely go to either one of our websites, and you can find all of the links. So Daniel's website is danielabbottfiction.com. My website is rajeljones.com. So you can absolutely go to Amazon, and all you have to do is search Wounds. If you use my unique name, it might make your search easier. So I've been telling people to search Wounds Rajel, and that's an easy way to find it. We are on...
That's R-A-Z-E-L, y'all.
Thank you. Yeah, R-A-Z-E-L. R-A-Z-E-L. Yep, we're on IndieBound. We're on Barnes & Noble. You can check many of your local stores, and we're there. If they don't have it, you do us a great favor by asking them to get it and purchasing it there. So there's tons of ways, but if you go to either one of our websites, you can find links for each of those ways. Or if you just want to go to Amazon, you can just search Amazon Wounds Rajel, and you'll find it right there.
In the conclusion of this episode, there's going to be an offer as well for you to get one of these books straight to you raffled, because I have multiple copies and we're going to make that happen. So please pay attention to the conclusion of the episode so you can learn more about that. But more importantly, go out and get it. All right. There's much more to this book. You've just got a taste today, and it's definitely different, but difference needed. It's beautifully different. I want to say, I admire what you've put here and the power of story. It allows people in. People fear what or who they don't understand, and people tend to not care or step in for people they don't know. You're helping us know, and you're helping us recover. You're inspiring me to listen more and build deeper relationships. Daniel, I'm borrowing from your brother Denny right now. You're a titan. Both of you are.
Thanks, Joe.
Yes, and... I mean, how can we recover something we didn't even know existed? So, y'all, life begins at the end of your comfort zone. Let's go there. Let's see what we're missing. Thanks, Rajel.
Thank
you,
so
Daniel.
Much, Joe. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you so much.
I hope you were inspired today by Rajel and Daniel. Let's get the word out there. I'm raffling off a few copies of their book, Wounds. You can be entered to get in on it in one of three ways. One, reshare one of our social media posts featuring this particular episode. Or two, like the Rechoice Podcast Facebook group page. Or email me at rechoicepod@gmail.com. I will draw names on Tuesday, December 15th, and post it on the group page. as well as contact the winners. To close us out, you're about to hear Daniel read Rajel's words at the very end of the book. It will serve as a good launch to this episode.
This is the afterword of Wounds, written by Rajel. It is my hope, our hope, that these stories Daniel and I have shared will make you think and cause you to consider your own actions and your own stories. To the white reader, we ask that you do the work to be a part of the solution, to recognize that you have been given advantages that others don't have, that it's not your fault, it's your opportunity. Your opportunity to use your influence to ensure equity for all. Use your inherited advantages as platforms to speak against injustice, to live against injustice. To the black reader, the brown reader, the marginalized reader, we hope you find strength in recognizing that our normal is abnormal. You are not crazy. You are not wrong. Your experience is valid. Your frustration is valid. Your pain is genuine. Your wounds are real. Don't give up on healing. Don't give up on dreaming. Don't give up on thriving. Do the work to make sure we don't become what we hate. When you rise to a position of power, and we will rise, don't repeat the ignorance we've seen, we've felt, and we've experienced. Do better. Be better. Together. Together is the only way we will truly overcome. Warriors and allies fighting together to destroy and rebuild our broken systems. War produces casualties. This war has produced far too many casualties. It's up to each of us to not allow these casualties to be in vain. Do not allow our wounds to be in vain.
Thank you, Rajel Jones and Daniel Abbott. Thanks also to my son, Danny Pellerito, for the music. And listeners, thank you for stopping, dropping, and rolling with our show today. Reframe your past, renew your present, and reclaim your future, because after all, it's always a choice. Take care, and see you next time.